Welcome to Mark and Friends for March 27th, 2025. I'm your host, Donna Leland, and we're talking with our Bible teacher today, Carolyn Eastfold, and we've been thinking about the names of God. Welcome to Mark and Friends, Carolyn.
Thank you, Donna. It's good to be back.
Now, this is another special day because this is our super volunteer, Paul, who is your husband. It's his birthday.
Yes, it is. Oh, happy birthday, Paul.
Shout out to our super volunteer. He comes in every day. He's retired, but boy, Carolyn, he's been doing this for many years.
He enjoys it. He really enjoys it, and it's good for him to have a part in the ministry.
So tell us, what name are we focusing in on now today?
Today it's El Elyon, which means God Most High. And it's a very important, I think, crucial name for us to know and to remember about God, because I wonder how many of our listeners have watched the news and thought our world is totally out of control. Because the news can be scary, and sometimes it's tragic. And sometimes we look at these people that are world leaders and we wonder, does the fate of our whole world depend on human people? Or wouldn't it be wonderful to have someone who was in control, someone who was good and is sovereignly in control of all things? And that is exactly who our God is. So that's what El Elyon means. God Most High, the sovereign ruler of the universe. Apparently names are very important to God. Because remember how he changed Abram's name to Abraham, Sarai to Sarah, and Simon to Peter, and even the name Jesus itself has a very special meaning. It means the Lord saves. In the biblical times, the name revealed a person's character, and over the course of Israel's history, as we have revealed to us in the Old Testament, God revealed to them his character and his attributes, his nature, as he revealed himself in his name. Okay, last time we learned about the name Elohim, which God revealed in Genesis 1, and it means that he is our creator. He's the creator of all things. Today, the name is revealed in Genesis 14, El Elyon. Now, if we could separate the attributes of God from all the others, this one would scare us to death.
Mm.
Because a completely sovereign ruler who wasn't loving and merciful and compassionate and forgiving, that would just be unbearable to us. We'd be at the mercy of a totally unjust and unloving power, but thankfully that is not the case. And we can't actually separate God's attributes from all the others. So we don't need to fear his sovereignty because of his great love for us. He is our loving Heavenly Father. So instead, we should be finding comfort and security in this name, El Elyon, God Most High. There's the reasons we want to know God's names, because the better we know his character, the easier it is for us to trust him. And I was just thinking about some of the verses to talk about the name of the Lord. Proverbs 18 says, "The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous runs to it and is safe." In Isaiah 50, it says, "Who among you fears the Lord? Who walks in darkness and has no light? Let him trust in the name of the Lord and rely on his God." And in Psalm 20, it says, "Some boast in chariots and some in horses, but we will boast in the name of the Lord, our God." Boast in the name of the Lord means to have confidence in him, to trust in his name. So we want to know more and more about what God's character is and his nature, so that we actually will put our trust in him more completely and without fear. So first of all, let's look at the definition. What does El Elyon even mean? Well, the term Elyon was a title that was given to the highest of the Canaanite gods, and the Hebrews then added the El, E-L, onto the front of it, so it became El Elyon, and the word El means God. That just signifies might and strength. And so they were saying, our God is the highest of high gods. So when we praise the Most High God, we are worshiping the one whose power and mercy and sovereignty cannot be matched by anyone. It's our rule that we always look back to the first use of the name to understand its meaning, and that's in Genesis 14. And the situation there was when Abraham's nephew Lot was living in the city of Sodom, and there was a battle among the kings in the area, and Sodom was one of the cities that was taken over. And when Abraham heard that his nephew had been taken captive, he took his trained men, 318 of them, and he went out to pursue those conquering kings. And because God blessed them, they defeated them, and they were able to take back Lot and all the people and all the goods that had been taken by those kings. So that brings us up to Genesis 14:17. Because when Abraham came back, the king of Sodom went out to meet him, and Melchizedek, the king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. Now he was the priest of the Most High God. Now, interesting that this Canaanite king is called the priest of the Most High God. So apparently he was a believer in the one true God. And Melchizedek blessed Abraham and said, "Blessed be Abram of the God Most High, El Elyon, possessor of heaven and earth, and blessed be God Most High," again, El Elyon, "who has handed over you your enemies to you." So Melchizedek and Abraham were both recognizing that God had given Abraham the victory, enabling him to rescue his nephew. So their God, Yahweh, or Jehovah, was higher than any of those pagan gods of the Canaanites around them. And whenever we think about being higher, that just conveys an idea of superiority and power and strength and authority. So God Most High, or the Lord Most High, means that there is no god, idol, or created thing that should be worshipped or exalted above the Lord, because he is superior in every way.
You know what's really caught me when you were sharing that is that story of Sodom and Gomorrah, and how God even rescued the Sodomites and showed them kindness and mercy, because he is the God over all people. And, you know, bringing back Lot and all the goodies, but the people of Sodom were also blessed as well.
So on the other side of things, though, what happens when we human beings forget who are the highest in heaven and earth? And we can see that in the story of Nebuchadnezzar in the book of Daniel. Nebuchadnezzar's story, he was the king of Babylon at the time the Lord handed over Judah into exile for their disobedience and idol worship. The Jewish people, the Israelites, the Judeans, they were God's people, and as long as they were obedient to him, he blessed them. But when they would fall into idol worship, then he would discipline them for the point of bringing them back to himself. And so this was the case right here. Judah had been taken over by Babylon. And the Babylonians had taken the cream of the crop of the young Judean men. And those names are familiar. Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Those young Jewish men who had determined that they would not eat the king's rich foods or bow to any pagan gods. So we'll pick up the story in chapter 4. Nebuchadnezzar had had a dream that troubled him that none of his wise men could interpret, but Daniel, with God's inspiration, did interpret it. And so would you read that, Daniel 4, 28 through 33 for us, please?
Sure. All this happened to King Nebuchadnezzar. 12 months later, as the king was walking on the roof of the royal palace of Babylon, he said, "Is not this the great Babylon I have built as the royal residence, by my mighty power and for the glory of my majesty?" Even as the words were on his lips, a voice came from heaven. "This is what is decreed for you, King Nebuchadnezzar. Your royal authority has been taken from you. You will be driven away from people and will live with wild animals. You will eat grass like the ox. 7 times will pass before you until you acknowledge that the Most High is sovereign over all kingdoms on earth and gives to anyone he wishes." Immediately, what had been said about Nebuchadnezzar was fulfilled. He was driven away from people. He ate grass like the ox. His body was drenched with the dew of heaven, until his hair grew like the feathers of an eagle and his nails like the claws of a bird.
Nebuchadnezzar was taking credit for his greatness and all his success and prosperity and the great beauty of the city of Babylon that had been created. But who was the real source of his prosperity?
El Elyon.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was not Nebuchadnezzar. And well, after that period of 7 periods of time, as indicated, this is what Nebuchadnezzar said in verse 34. "But the end of that period, I, Nebuchadnezzar, raised my eyes toward heaven, and my reason returned to me, and I blessed the Most High, and praised and honored him who lives forever. For his dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom endures from generation to generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are of no account, but he does things according to his will among the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of earth. No one can fend off his hand or say to him, 'What have you done?' At that time, my reason returned to me, and my majesty and splendor were restored to me for the honor of my kingdom, and my state counselors and my nobles began seeking me out. So I was reestablished in my sovereignty and surpassing greatness that was added to me. And now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise, exalt, and honor the King of heaven, for all his works are true, and his ways are just. and he is able to humble those who walk in pride, which he certainly had been. So Daniel had told Nebuchadnezzar in chapter 2 that was going to happen, that this was a decree of the Most High, and it certainly came through just as like as he said. And Daniel had said, until you learn that the Most High has sovereignty over the kingdom of mortals and gives it to whom he will, and you will learn that heaven is sovereign.
That's so powerful. Wow, that is just so powerful. And what I really got from that was, when I lifted my eyes to heaven, when I lifted my eyes to heaven, my reason was restored. And we see that play out even today when people are doing their own thing, but then they lift their hearts and their minds to God. They begin to say, God, you have to be real. Their reason, they're able to think. That is powerful.
That is true. Mm-hmm. So we can be encouraged that just like Elion ruled over the affairs of men in the times of the Babylonian Empire and all the times through history, he still rules today. K. Arthur said, if God is not sovereign, he is not in control, and if all things are not under his dominion, then he is not the Most High. And you and I are either in the hands of fate, whatever that is, in the hands of man, or in the hands of the devil. Whew. So thankfully, our Most High God, El Elyon, is sovereign, and he is good. And we can say that we believe that God is sovereign. But I want us to go a little further and just think about some of these things that his sovereignty includes. There's just so many passages we could read, but just to touch on a few. Isaiah 46, God is talking, and he said, I declare the end from the beginning. I will accomplish all my good pleasure. Truly I have spoken. Truly I will pass it, bring it to pass. I have planned it, and I will certainly do it. So his plans are sovereign, and he is in control of the end from the beginning. And then Daniel 2, back to Daniel, he said, Daniel said this, may the name of God be blessed forever and ever, for wisdom and power belong to him. He changes the times and the periods. He removes kings and he appoints kings. He gives wisdom to wise men and knowledge to people of understanding. It is he who reveals the profound and hidden things. He knows what is in the darkness, and the light dwells in him. So he controls the times and the epochs that we live in, and he removes the kings and he appoints the kings.
Mm.
He's sovereign over that, over our politics and over our time. So in Isaiah 5, God is talking about Israel. He refers to Israel as his vineyard. And he said, so now let me tell you what I'm going to do to my vineyard. I will remove its hedge and it will be consumed. I will break down its wall and it will be trampled ground. I will lay it to waste. It will not be pruned or hoed, but briars and thorns will come up. I will also command the clouds not to rain on it. So we see that God is sovereign over the nation Israel. And over all the nations, really. Deuteronomy 32, God is speaking again, and he says, see now that I am he. There is no God beside me. It is I who put to death, and I give life. I have wounded, and it is I who heal. And there is no one who can save anyone from my hand. So that we see that even life and death, God is sovereign over that. And in 1 Samuel, when Hannah was... Well, she became the mother of Samuel, but not yet. This time she was barren. She wasn't having any children, and she was praying to God to give her a child. But it said the Lord had closed her womb. And we know later on he opened it, and she was able to have children. But the sovereignty of even having children is in God's hands, because the Lord had closed her womb for a time. For Samuel 2, it talks about life and death. The Lord puts to death and makes alive. The Lord makes the poor and the rich. He humbles and he also exalts. The pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and he sets the world on them. And I love this verse. He watches over the feet of his godly ones. But the wicked ones are silenced in the darkness, for not by might shall a person prevail. Those who contend with the Lord will be terrified. Against them he will thunder in the heavens, and the Lord will judge the ends of the earth. So he is sovereign over the judgment of the world. But in the midst of all that, we see that he watches over the feet of his godly ones. So he doesn't forget about his children, even in the times of judgment. Isaiah 45. God is speaking again, that there is no one beside me. I am the Lord, and there is no one else. The one forming light and creating darkness, causing well-being and creating disaster. I am the Lord who does all these things. Then we can move on to the New Testament, when Jesus was on trial before Pilate. And this is in John 19. And Pilate said to Jesus, "Are you not speaking to me? Do you not know that I have the authority to release you, and I have the authority to crucify you?" And how did Jesus answer him? He said, "You would have no authority over me at all if it had not been given to you from above." So again, God is just totally sovereign over all things in the universe. And that's just a glimpse of the things and of his sovereignty.
I think as Americans, you know, we think we have to pull ourselves up by the bootstraps. We've got to get it done, that everything we have is because we put effort into it. And it's just a lovely, you know, I lift my eyes to God and, you know, clarity returns in that he's God and I'm not. And I just feel like we got to get taken back to that point where he is sovereign and he can do anything he wants.
It does restore our sanity, and doesn't it, when we get into panic about things are out of control, we look to God and we see that he's in control. He is working all things together for good for those who love him and are called according to his purpose. Yes, it's very reassuring. But you know, there's somebody else. What about Satan? Now, some people think he's God's counterpart, or he's much power as God does.
No.
But what does the Bible say about that? In Isaiah 14, there is one who claimed, "I will ascend to heaven. I will raise my throne above the stars of God. I will sit on the mountain of assembly in the recesses of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will make myself like the Most High," or El Elyon again. So Satan was thinking he was equal to God or even above God. But let's look at the book of Job to find out about that. In Job 1, we read, "There was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came with them, and God said, 'Where have you come from?' And Job said, 'From roaming the earth and walking on it.' And then the Lord said to Satan, 'Have you considered my servant Job? For there was no one like him. He's a blameless and upright man, fearing God and turning away from evil.' But Satan just turned back to God, and he says, 'But does he fear you for nothing? You put a fence around him and all he has, and you have blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased. But if you reach out your hand now and touch all that he has, he will certainly curse you to your face.' And then the Lord said to Satan, 'Behold, all that he has is in your power. Only do not reach out and put your hand on him.' So Satan left the presence of the Lord and proceeded to cause great disaster with Job, losing his children and his possessions. So Satan was thinking the only reason that Job feared God is because God had blessed and prospered him. And if he took away that blessing, then Job would curse him. But the point is, we want to get here is that Satan had to ask permission to send these afflictions on Job. He had to ask God's permission for him to even touch Job. So it's really God was in control, not Satan. And then again, in Job 2, Satan comes back after all of that. And, you know, God said, "Well, he still has not sinned, even though you've reached out and done all this to him." And Satan then says, "Well, skin for skin, reach out at your hand now and touch his bone and flesh, and he will curse you to his face." And again, the Lord said, "He's in your power, only spare his life." So again, God gave him permission, but he put a boundary on it. Mm-hmm. You've got to spare his life. And so he did that to Job. He got these horrible boils. And despite all this, the Bible says Job did not sin with his lips. And again, our point is, who was in control? Satan still had to ask God's permission for any of the horrible things that he did to this man. Satan was just trying to show God that people only love and follow him because of his goodness to them. And God was demonstrating that people will love and obey because of who he is. Because our lives are pictures that bring glory to God, to give the world an accurate picture of who our God is, on earth as in heaven. So when testing comes, our responses are very, very important.
Yeah.
Because we want to have those testing bring us closer to God and not to curse him to his face, as Satan said Job would. The truth of God's sovereignty makes it easier to believe these promises that we have, that he works all things together for good to those who love him and are called according to his purpose. So rejoicing in all circumstances of life, those sound like impossible things to obey. But yet when we understand that our good and loving Father is the one who is sovereign, and he does things for our purpose, and even Satan himself cannot go any further than God allows him to, that brings us a great deal of security in our Father's hands.
It really is a challenge to, when things come in our life, to consider it pure joy when we face trials of many kinds, knowing that the testing of our faith develops perseverance, and perseverance is going to finish its work so we can be perfect and complete, not lacking anything. And I think of that whole lacking is we lack an understanding of his sovereignty, that he's God and he can allow these things into my life. And we lack that understanding that he loves me. This is not to harm me, but this is a situation we find ourselves in. We live on a fallen planet, right? And so, you know, the rain is going to go just unjust, but drought will also go on just unjust. So maybe you, dear listener, today are thinking of what you're facing. Maybe it's a physical trial. Maybe it's a economic trial, relationship. Just know in the midst of it, God is God and no one is above him. And I think that gives me a lot of peace, knowing that this isn't happening to me because of other people. God is allowing this. And there is a purpose, my friend. And we just need to see this as a moment when we can trust him in an even deeper way. Well, thanks again for being our Bible teacher. We so appreciate you.
It's always fun to talk to you, Donna. I enjoy it, and I enjoy the insights that you bring.
And thank you, dear listener, for being a part of Mark and Friends, a ministry of Great News Media. And as always, we want to thank you for your partnership in this ministry. We are listener-supported Christian radio, and it's because of your generous giving. We call it the grace of God and the grace of your giving that keeps this radio ministry on the air. I'm your host, Donna Leland. Thanks again for being a part of Mark and Friends. Have a great day.